Welcome to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast, your home for insights and insider knowledge about hypnotic change work. With your hosts, control practitioners and hypnotists, Nicole Mazzucato and Anthony Gage.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Hypnotic Healers. I'm Nicole Mazzucato, and as always, I'm here with my friend and co-host Anthony Gage, all the way over there. Our usual disclaimer before we get started, neither Anthony nor I are licensed medical professionals, psychologists or psychiatrists, so please do not make any changes or alterations to any treatments or medications that you're on based on the conversation you hear here today. Take what you like, leave the rest. While you're leaving stuff, you could leave us a like, a love, a heart, a thumbs up, a review, get in touch, drop us a message, say hello. Hello, hello.
So hello, Nicole. It's always good to see you as usual. And today we're going to be talking about something a little bit really within our realm of knowledge and scope and all that kind of good stuff. And that's parts work, parts therapy. I don't like to call it parts therapy. I like to call it parts work. The reason I say it's right up our alley is because when we do control, even the way that we explain the control system to clients and whatnot, it lends itself very easily understandable way of doing parts work with people. Right, it makes it really accessible for them. They're almost excited to do it. It makes it interesting. It brings out that curiosity. It opens up all of the potentials within the subconscious mind, because we're introducing these ideas that create curiosity.
The ship and the captain and the crew analogy, I think, is a great analogy to give to clients in, you know, at the beginning of the process before you've even started. And it gives a point of reference as well, because we can constantly refer back to the crew members. You can elaborate on this analogy in all sorts of ways, you know, create all sorts of subplots,
right,
and things like that around the captain and the crew. So it becomes a really fun way of working as well, because it gives a lot of scope for development.
Right. Well, I think is what it does. It allows people to feel okay with some of the uncomfortable things that they're going through in their life, because it just puts a different frame on it for them, where it's like, you know, yeah, this is me. I mean, we're not certainly suggesting anything like that, but it gives them a way to identify with a behavior in a different manner. They can take control of it in the sense of how they're responding to the stimulus.
In terms of the analogy itself, I mean, it's really flexible and adaptable, because you can, for example, I was working with a teenager who was, you know, football mad. So rather than talk about a ship and a captain and a crew that is completely unrelatable to them, I was talking about a football team, a coach, and, you know, the captain of the team and whatnot. So again, you know, I've worked with professionals who I've referred to, I've used the model more as like, you know, you've got the CEO and the employees, right, of the company.
Right.
So there's loads of different ways of using analogy and story, if you like, to engage the client, but to help facilitate the understanding of what we're talking about. You know, you're kind of basically boiling it down to this really simple concept that people really get. And they're like, oh yeah, that makes loads of sense.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, we all talk about ourselves in parts all the time. And as far as I'm aware, in almost every language, because everyone I've ever spoken to in different languages agrees that they do the same thing. So, you know, we always talk about there's a part of me that wants to lose weight, but there's a part of me that just wants to sit on the sofa and eat that chocolate cake.
Yeah.
And we all do it. We all have that really integrated in our language.
Well, and it's not only integrated into our language, it's look at the way we're raised with even, you know, what our parents say. What's that? Why is that naughty little boy in there? You've got the naughty side and the good side, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff that, you know, we're taught from when we're little.
Well, the angel and the devil and, you know, different faces of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of story around the different parts. I mean, I think one of the best representations of this is in the film Inside Out, the Disney film Inside
Yes.
Out.
I love that film. It so describes, I've seen it 100 times now, because I'm just like, that is so, people that don't have children need to watch that so they can understand how they're doing what they're doing. Or why they're doing what they're doing, right? What's going on inside of them. Because it's great.
Yeah, it's not, it's like a lot of films that even though it's kind of, you know, the design is more kid oriented, the content is very relatable no matter what age you are.
Yes.
And you can take different things from it at different ages. Right. So kids will maybe take one thing from it and adults take something else. But I think it's such that it's this brilliant representation, isn't it? And very much I've heard of, you know, there are techniques that say you need to get rid of the part that's doing the thing you don't want.
Yeah. And
you know, again, we've had Roy Hunter on here, who's one of the kind of, you know, forefathers, if you like, of parts therapy. And if you haven't heard that episode, I highly recommend you go back and listen to it and also read his books. This is a really brilliant man who's done some really important work in the field of hypnosis and has brought parts really to the forefront of hypnosis. And I don't think there's a hypnosis school that doesn't teach parts in some way, shape, or form.
Right. Exactly. It is. Everything is inclusive of it, just about. They all want to call it something a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, he is the guy that helped that Charles Tippett stuff really come. I mean, not only in the hypnosis world, but it's spread across, you know, traditional therapy worlds. And you know, even when when we're talking about parts therapy, there's even the idea of ego state therapy. Right? Because ego states are different parts, essentially. And they all boil down to the same thing. How do we get in touch with the part that's doing the thing we're not happy with them doing and ask them to do something different?
Right. And a lot of it, and going back to, you know, Inside Out, so they're represented by emotions, right? The different emotions, anger, joy, sadness. I can't remember the other ones. You know, they're represented by these emotions. And I think I've talked about this before because I talk about it a lot. This really unhelpful narrative that we have positive and negative emotions. It's so damaging because it causes resistance and it causes rejection to how I feel and what's going on and this process. And I shouldn't be angry and I shouldn't be jealous and I shouldn't be irritated. Rather than embracing the moment, embracing the experience as an uncomfortable, okay, it's a little bit uncomfortable, right? We have comfortable and uncomfortable experiences. Yeah. So we need to embrace those uncomfortable experiences, get to know them. And rather than, so that for me, this is what how I talk about, I guess, leaning into something, right? We're not wallowing in it. We're not sitting in this pit of misery and despair for weeks and weeks on end.
Right.
But getting familiar with it. What's going on here? Why am I feeling this way? What's it trying to tell me? And what's kind of the next step? Or what's the next thing that I need to do here to calm this thing that's kind of fired off in me? And at the end of the day, nothing is permanent, right? All of these feelings, happiness, joy, anger, sadness, they're all transient, right? Every part of us is transient. No part of us has got its hands on the wheel, if you like, 100% of the time.
Thank goodness. Right? How boring would we be? Right? Or how overwhelming would other people be if they were always on? That can give you really kind of like, ugh. You know what I mean?
So coming back to the original point, which was, you know, there are some techniques that say you need to get rid of the part that's doing the thing that you don't want it to do. I'm talking about you and I, we don't work in that way. I know a lot of other schools don't work in that way. And, you know, one of the great things among many that I learned from Tim when I trained in the control system was we don't throw a crew member overboard, right? That crew member is on board. It believes what it's doing in your best interest.
Right.
Most of the time, unless we've got a saboteur, but even then with a saboteur, we're doing parts integration, right? We're kind of bringing it back into the group. So rather than getting rid of something, we thank it for what it's been doing because it believes that it's been doing it in your best interest for whatever reason and get it, you know, to take on a different job, to do a new role. You know, we might give it a promotion, whatever it is. You know, we're changing the role, but I don't believe that that's up to the hypnotist to decide what new role the part should be doing.
That is correct. And I think that that's why we leave it extremely ambiguous when we, you know, select that new resource that is going to be best suited to bring the benefit of this change to so-and-so, right? That's kind of the way that I word it, because, you know, I think that the part knows what it needs, what is going to be the best solution, the best strategy for the most happiness, right? I think that internally, that's something that is, that we just know. Oftentimes we just need permission to go there.
And isn't that the basis of a lot of what we do? The client knows, you know, hand, you have to have faith. You have to have faith in your client.
Yeah.
Right. You have to they know how to, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's a bit of a paradox. They know how to solve the problem, yet they can't solve it on their own.
Right. Right. And we are simply there to just help facilitate, get by that barrier. And actually create that line of communication with that part, that, because that's the part that they can't do on their own, right? Is that that's that subconscious part, right? And so once we teach them how to bridge that gap, now they've got the resources that they can do it themselves. And that's why I say, like you were saying, they know what the part knows what the appropriate next thing is to do, usually. Right. I mean, I don't think it hurts us to, kind of guide with terminology like the best benefit for the client, understanding what that is, you know, because again, this is why we get to work content free in that kind of sense as well with these parts, is because the part, if the client didn't know the answer to the question, they wouldn't have asked it. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? That's the way I think about it. So the answer lies within, and if it didn't, it wouldn't feel as if they were doing something the wrong way. Right? That's how I look at it. And so for me, yeah, they've got the answer. They have to have the answer, otherwise they wouldn't know to ask the question.
Yeah, which is a bit of a, it messes with your head in its own right, doesn't it? You know, it's that, you know, when you're working with somebody and whatever's happening in that moment, whether you've said a particular word, you've thrown something back at them, you've repeated something to them, you've shone that light on the dark corner of the cupboard that they haven't been looking at, you know, or they haven't, whatever, for whatever reason, they haven't quite got to that corner. And then you see all of a sudden you see it happen in their mind, you know, suddenly things just click into place. Oh, okay. Right. I hadn't thought about that before. Or, you know, the pieces were there, but they were in completely different parts of the house. And I'd never, you know, kind of never thought to bring them together in the same room in that way. It's a bit like art. I'm not an arty-farty person at all, but it is a bit like art, I suppose. You know, there's so many different interpretations, and what looks right to somebody one way, if you flip it another way, maybe that looks right to somebody else, and then that suddenly makes sense. So it's helping somebody make sense of something, see something that maybe they haven't seen before, and put those pieces together.
Right. So it's that whole reframing of it. It's like, what are all of the different angles of this particular thing that you're not recognizing at this point, right? And once we allow, and I think that that's a big piece of it, once we allow the subconscious, or you can give permission for that curiosity to go and look for something better, because I think that we're so conditioned to believe, like I've said 100 times, you know, we're conditioned to believe that change is difficult, and that it's not just a matter of changing your mind, of just doing something different. Well, that's exactly what it is. Just do something different. You know, but people want to rail against it. You know what I mean? They're just like, it's just not that easy. It's not that easy. Well, okay. It's not. You're right. It's not. I know it's been that easy for me, but it's not for you, correct? Because you're very special. I see.
I remember seeing a woman, I think her name is Barbara Scholl. I believe she's German. And I saw her do a talk at one of the online hypnosis conventions, and she does a lot of parts work with kids. And I really loved her presentation. It was so beautiful. And I've used it with adults as well, where she, you know, she gets them to kind of gather it up inside of them. And then she, you know, kind of gets them to pull it out, put follow the ball, kind of pull the ball down their arm and it pops out into their hand, whatever color it is, and then turn it into like a figure, a shape, a form, whatever that might be. And I've had people working with dragons and all sorts of crazy stuff. It's amazing. And then again, it's the same thing. It's parts therapy. And then you've got, you know, another part in the other hand. And again, that pops out and becomes whatever it needs to be, you know, so you've got like the princess and the dragon or something like that. And then you get this dialogue going and, you know, you do parts integration that way. Amazing. It's really amazing, you know, especially for, you know, people that can really engage in that, I suppose that story element, if you like.
Well, yeah,
I've seen some amazing things happen with adults that I've used it with. But, you know, I don't know if she did a demo with kids, but she was, you know, kind of talking about how she uses it with kids.
That's really cool. And it sounds very much like ego state therapy almost, because with that, and I've only done with adults, but, you know, you move from chair to chair to chair as you take on the persona of each part that you're working with that is dealing with
whatever.
Is that
similar to IFS? Internal family systems.
I don't know. I don't know what IFS is. I know that.
Right. I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, ego. I learned about it through Mike Bendel, and then I started reading the several books about it because it was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of what we do here with parts. But they literally have you sit, you know, for each persona sort of thing, for each ego state, each of those personas sit in a different chair and then they converse, right? You switch the rules and it's the same thing. It's just a physical, you know, I think it's better for those people that want to physically do it and they want to actually verbalize, and take those roles on that way. It's like what we used to do in Five Path, essentially, when we have, you know, people switching back and forth between the perpetrator and the victim, right? When we have that conversation going, and it's along the same kind of theory.
Yeah, it can be really helpful when you're working with parts, you know, to help the client identify it, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, kind of locate it where it is in their body. And I often find 9 times out of 10, it's located in a main chakra, usually in the solar plexus or the heart. They're kind of like the main hitters, sometimes in the throat.
Throat, a lot.
Or head, whatever. But I usually find that they're in the main.
It's interesting that you bring that up because when I recognize when it's in the throat, it's people who are afraid to kind of speak for themselves, as usual, right, with that kind of thing. But it is always interesting what chakra it shows up with.
Yeah.
You're right. That's a good point.
And then so once they've kind of located it, like help them identify it, right? And by identifying it, they're giving it a shape, a form, maybe even a name. And then I find it becomes much easier if you're working in this way for them to give it a voice, for them to kind of, you know, bring it alive in that sense. Because if you're just kind of like, well, you know, there's a part, you know, sometimes people just can't connect to it in that way. Right. So I find that if you're working on all of these different levels, the physical level, so by connecting with the body, then it may be visual for them, or it may be, I remember somebody telling me they had like this green sticky goo in their throat. And it was just amazing how they, okay, well, what do you need to do to get that green sticky goo to, you know, stop being green sticky goo, you know? And it was just amazing how this thing transformed into something else.
Well, yeah, it's just like when we're doing control with what we call the WWW, the what, the where, the weight. And any time that I do that, and I try to get the students to understand that whatever is creating that feeling that the client is experiencing and building that sensation off of, that's the part you want to talk to. And that's when a lot of things kind of click with some of the students. I get it now. It's like, yeah, that thing that's creating that feeling, that unpleasant thing, that's what we're trying to change. Yeah.
Right.
So that would be the part. That would be the crew member we want to talk to. But it's interesting because it's so subtle and so simple that we just can't believe that it's that easy.
Yeah. Well, you know, we like to complicate things, don't we?
Then
again, something that I've talked about on this podcast before is you know, a phrase that I coined of collateral healing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've communicated, sometimes we get multiple parts coming through. You've done what you needed to do with these parts, whatever, the main part has figured it out. You've done parts integration where, you know, as we would call it, the saboteur has been invited back into the group. They've all made friends. Everyone's happy again. Whatever the process was, whatever the work was that needed to take place. And you so often find that once you've kind of knocked it on the head with that part or the couple of parts that were involved in whatever was going on, that other things just sort themselves out. Yep. You know, you're dealing with anxiety and then suddenly somebody, that person's like, well, I've just stopped smoking and I've started going to the gym and, you know, I've changed the way that I'm eating. We never even talked about that.
Right.
You know, but then they're noticing that those have been, you know, kind of knock-on effects, if you like,
yeah,
from the work that you've done. All of a sudden I'm sleeping better, but we were working on, I don't know, public speaking, whatever it was. Do you not, you know? So yeah, it's like, yeah, you've worked with that part and then other parts have suddenly realized, oh, you know, we can make positive changes too, or we can make helpful changes too, or
whatever
changes.
The thing was that they had built their strategy on no right. longer exist.
Yeah.
And so they have to change. And because if what they built their strategy on isn't even there anymore, you either change or die, right? Because you don't have any option than to, yeah, it's interesting when we think about collateral healing in that kind of a way. Yeah. I talk about it all the time with my clients that it's like, you know, when we pull that foundation stone, once that foundation stone is pulled, you don't know what's going to happen. And we don't right. always know when we're going to find that, right? We could find it immediately. Yeah. It could be, you know, it might not be until session two to some degree, maybe. Hopefully we get it in session one and you get to experience all of that cascading effect that, you know, everything just starts to fall into place. And it happens. It happens all the time.
But I think that's the importance of seeing somebody for, you know, three sessions rather than the one and done.
Yeah.
You know, the one and done is, I don't know, it sounds very grandiose, you know, one and done and off you go. But we want to make sure we're asking people's minds to make changes to patterns of thought, feeling, behavior that they've been running for probably potentially most of their lives or a big chunk of their lives. We want to make sure that everything is in place. Everything, you know, all of the parts are working harmoniously. Nobody's got any kind of problems that they want to bring up or issues that they need to voice or whatever. And send that client on their way, knowing that this, they've got the change that they want. This has not just been a temporary fix or, you know, I want to check in with my client and know that, yeah, they've got the result that they want, or they're on their way and we might need to tweak a couple of things or whatever it is that we need to do. But I want to send, you know, kind of a grand farewell to my clients. Congratulations. Off you go. Go and live your life and enjoy. And know that that's it's been the process that they need it to be. Look, that's not the case for every client, as we know. But, you know, when we have those successes, which is most of the time, people come away with the result that they want. It's I do feel that it's important to have those follow-up sessions to be able to check in and consolidate the work that you've done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I like the fact that you know, we've got a unit of measure, right? We're able to measure the success as we move through these sessions. And I think that that's important. I think it's not only important for us so we can see what it is that we're doing and are we hitting our mark, which that system, you know, the system we use makes that very simple, but it empowers the client, right? They begin to recognize and experience that change can indeed be as simple as they allow it to be. That it's an option to hold on to that stuff.
Yeah, it does amaze me that I think there are a lot of hypnotists that don't have that measuring system in place as part of their process. Because I've talked to a lot of hypnotists that don't know how to measure their success because they don't have that as part of their process.
That's strange to me because how do you know if you're being effective?
Right, but that's the thing. Clients forget. Right? They forget how bad the anxiety was. They forget how they felt when they weren't sleeping before they saw you. So, and it happens. It happens. It'll come, they'll do a session with you, they'll go away. They feel so much better that they don't even attribute the change to the work that they've done with you.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to say my clients, I don't like that. The people that I work with, I make sure That is not the case.
You make damn sure that they know that this is because you came and saw me.
Well, no, that's not what I'm saying, but I want them to, that's so nice. That, what I want them to recognize is that they have in fact made the changes and they haven't just glossed over it and they become complacent about the change they've made, right? Because that
and
happens.
It was me that did it.
That is so not true. Oh, you're terrible, Muriel.
I'm only half yanking your leg.
Anyway, so no, but you know, I think that it's, I think that I've had those clients before that they've gotten everything that they wanted from the session, but because they're so focused on the next thing that's not working, that they don't even recognize that they have made these amazing strides forward, right? And I think that that's, I think it's important that they recognize that and they, that they celebrate those things. Cause like you said, you know, when we have integrated things, saboteurs, that sort of thing back into the system as a whole, that needs to be supported, right? Because it's like I've said 100 times on this show, you know, if you have a kid and you have made them a promise that at the end of the week, they're going to get something for changing their behavior, for doing a new behavior, and then that doesn't happen, the kid is going to go back to the old behavior because at least we're getting attention, right? And it's just like the saboteur, it's like anything that we reintegrate. We need to celebrate the wins that we're having, recognize when those crew members have made the changes that we're looking for, and celebrate those changes. Otherwise, why not go back to the old way?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We all like a bit of praise and a pat on the back.
Yeah. And our crew members are no different. And I make sure I say that shit out loud. When I first start recognizing changes that I want to make, and I've gone and I've seen you or Tim to facilitate that change, you know, when I experience it happening, I am out loud. I'm like, yeah, thanks guys. That's a better way to do this. You know, I mean, not if I'm on a busload of people or anything, but you know, I want to celebrate that.
I had this brilliant client. I mean, he was just amazing. And I remember him telling me that he got to a point where things, you know, he'd have a little chat with his crew and then he'd go sort of like mentally sort of go along the line, good job, man, good job, man, good job, man, and like shake all of their hands. Good day, well done. Yeah.
Good job, mate.
Yeah. And just had this real kind of, you know, dialogue going on and... I know, I loved it. It was really, really brilliant. And it made, you know, again, it's that relationship. I had another client tell me, I've never felt lonely since because I've got my crew with me all the time.
You know, and what an interesting thing to have gone through most, to have felt lonely because you didn't look at yourself in that kind of a sense or you know, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I've been talking to myself forever, so I've always, you know.
Yeah, but how you talk to yourself, that's a different conversation.
Right, because there's been most of that early stuff. You know, I'm not going to say I was ever too hard on myself. I don't call myself any negative names anymore. Unless I'm joking around. If I do something stupid, I'm like, that was really fucking stupid, dumbass, right? That kind of thing. But beyond that, and then I kind of laugh it off. But I've learned not to endorse negative self-talk.
Yeah.
Because parts don't like that. Certain parts, you know, and I do. I mean, I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there who may relate to what I'm about to say, but I've got a part, and I know that part, that when things feel sad and things feel really overwhelmed, I feel overwhelmed and I feel like I'm falling down into kind of a hole. There's a part that loves to grab a shovel and it just loves to dig. And it's got a really good companion that likes to throw more fucking dirt in there too. And they work in unison together. And it's like those times I'm like, okay, wait a minute.
Yes.
This, you two need to go away. Two don't need to play like this.
I often use the analogy when when we're talking about kind of self-talk with clients, that look, if you go to work every day for someone, let's say you go to the office and you've got this boss that's like, you know, you're useless, you're terrible at your job, I don't even know why I pay you, you know, you're just here, you're just doing your thing, you never do anything right, it's just constantly down on you, constantly criticizing you. How do you feel? You feel like shit, right? You feel demotivated. You don't want to go to work. You have no vested interest in the success of the company because all you're doing is rocking up and being put down, having your self-esteem completely destroyed and just being trampled on. Whereas if you go to work every day and you've got a boss that's like, hey, Anthony, how are you doing? Great to see you. How was your night? How's the family? Whatever. You're doing a great job. Look, you know, I love this piece of work that you did, but there's some things that we can tweak and improve. And hey, I've seen this course or this training that I think would be brilliant for you. You know, it's going to help you upskill and things like that. How are you going to feel? You're going to feel so much better, excited to go to work, motivated. You're invested in the success of this company.
Right, because they're invested in you, yeah.
Exactly, right? So be the boss to your crew that you want to show up for every day.
Right.
Yeah, not the one that it's a struggle to get out of bed for. And that's the captain, right? That's the conscious, you're doing a great job. Okay, I'm feeling a bit tired today. That's all right. Let's just take things a little bit slower.
Yep.
And that, you know, it's be the boss that you want to show up for every day.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Anyway, so cool conversation. Thanks.
Yeah, I enjoyed it today. Very good. Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you again next week. Thanks everybody for listening.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review and follow us on Facebook. You can also join our mailing list at hypnotichealers.com.